This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. There was some surprise news from the Catholic bishops who are meeting in Baltimore today. They say the Vatican asked them to delay voting on taking action on holding bishops accountable for protecting children in the clergy sex abuse crisis. Boston Cardinal Sean O'Malley is at that meeting. He's also a leader of the Vatican's efforts to protect children from clergy abuse, and he tells the Boston Globe that he learned about the Vatican's request early this morning. Joining us to talk about this is John Allen, the editor of Crux Magazine, a news site that covers the Vatican and the Catholic Church. Welcome back to Radio Boston, John.
Always a thrill to go back to our origins.
Also with us on the line, Ann Barrett Doyle. She's co-director of bishopaccountability.org. That's a website that documents the sex abuse crisis in the U.S. Thanks for being with us, Ann.
I'm delighted to be here, Deb. Hello, John.
Hi.
So, John, let's start with you. This is the biannual meeting of all 195 dioceses in the U.S. So why did the Vatican ask for this delay in voting when this meeting was supposed to take up how bishops might be held accountable for this wave of new sex abuse allegations that we heard about this summer?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, the bishops were supposed to adopt a new standard of conduct for themselves. I mean, we always knew that was going to require Vatican approval because in the Catholic system, there's only one superior of the bishop, and that's the Pope. But they were also expected to talk about how they were going to try to get to the bottom of the scandal surrounding former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick and many points beyond. Instead, Cardinal Daniel DiNardo of Galveston, Houston, who's the president of the conference, announced this morning that at the request of the Vatican's Conference of Bishops, they were supposed to stand down pending a meeting in February in Rome that the Pope has summoned for all the presidents of bishops' conferences all over the world. Now, we were given no explanation. The curious thing about this is the Pope's ambassador to the United States actually addressed the bishops this morning. He didn't say a word about it. It was DiNardo who relayed the Vatican's request. But what we are given to understand is that there were serious problems under church law with some of the things the bishops were supposed to vote on. They didn't finalize this action item until the 30th of October, just enough time for the Vatican to look it over. And apparently the decision was that if the bishops adopted this and it went to Rome, it would get shot down, which would obviously be bad optics for everyone. So they've been asked to wait for this global summit in February.
So there is legitimacy to the argument that this really needed more time than could have been given if they had taken action today.
Well, certainly what we are hearing from a number of bishops today and also canon lawyers we've consulted at Crux is that the proposal that was put in front of the bishops contained a number of anomalies under what's known as canon law, which is the body of law for the Catholic Church, and that had it been adopted as written, now, of course, the bishops could have amended it during the course of the meeting, but had it been adopted as it was proposed, inevitably would lead to a veto from the Vatican, and obviously nobody wanted that. The curious part about this is why they are being asked to wait until February at a time when I should note that the French bishops just last week brought out aggressive new policies and the Italian bishops are unveiling their new policies on Thursday. It's a bit curious that other bishops' conference in other parts of the world are being encouraged to move ahead while the Americans are being told to wait.
Do we know what sort of anomalies would have caused these problems without getting into too much minutiae here? I mean, is there something that was so egregious against canon law that they couldn't have amended it during this meeting
in
Baltimore?
I hope to God you'll be reading all about that on the Crux site tomorrow. Right now, I have to say it's unclear. What we know is that the proposals contained a checklist of conduct and accountability for bishops, which apparently raised issues under the code. Because let's remember, under church law, a bishop is basically autonomous in his own domain. His only superior is the Pope. The bishop's conference has no authority over him. And if what this amounted to was a sort of claim of authority by the conference over bishops' conduct, That obviously would be something that would have to be squared with church law. Mm-hmm. But it's premature to speculate about what the issues are, because honest to God, we just don't know.
Hmm. Anne Barrett Doyle, I want to bring you into this conversation. What's your take? You're in Baltimore for this meeting. What's your take on the Vatican's request and what happened?
Hi, Deb. Yes, I am in Baltimore. I am stunned. I really am stunned. I did not expect a lot to come out of the bishops' conference. I was not impressed by the proposals that were on the table. They seemed modest, inadequate to the demands for accountability, and yet they would have been something. It would have been good to hear the bishops talk about the need to correct brother bishops who are abusers or who enable abuse. Instead, even that modest bit of progress that may have come out of this meeting has been undercut by the Vatican. This is something that has happened before to the U.S. bishops. You know, in Dallas in 2002, to their credit, the U.S. bishops passed a one-strike-and-you're-out rule, and they also, in their initial draft of essential norms, which is the canon law that's particular to the United States, they voted to implement a mandatory reporting policy, and also in their charter, they put a provision that would have a very strong lay advisory board. Both the lay advisory board and the mandatory reporting provision were revised quite significantly by the Vatican, and the ultimate result was a much weaker policy. So when the Vatican intervenes, and we've seen this in Ireland too in the 1990s, the rules get weaker. It's a very chilling reminder of something as an American Catholic that I don't often think about, which is that the Holy See has great power over our American bishops. They are essentially answering to the head of a foreign government. The Holy See is an independent sovereign state. As John said, it's ruled by canon law. And the priorities of canon law are not only justice, but the suppression of scandal and the preservation of the priesthood. And we see that kind of culture and priority in play here. It's not a good day for the Catholic Church in the United States. What a bad situation, I believe, has just gotten worse.
Now, you are there, and you had some specific recommendations for the bishops about what should happen in terms of perhaps extending some sort of protection or accountability measures to bishops that had been imposed on clergy and churches in the past. Tell us what your specific recommendations are and how you think they might help.
These are recommendations that we think the bishops here could still implement despite the Vatican directive to not vote on their other proposals. We were urging them to each bishop to release a list of credibly accused clergy, a really informative list, complete with assignment histories and description of the allegations and photographs. More and more bishops throughout the United States are doing that. I think the latest count was roughly, you know, between 50 and 60. That is the single most compassionate thing a bishop can do. The other thing we were urging them to do, and they can still do this, is to decide that they are no longer going to block statute of limitation reform. In fact, they could do just the opposite. They could endorse the reform of statute of limitations, including the retroactive windows. We know that there is no more powerful way for the names of perpetrators to become public and for institutions to be held accountable. Those are two things the bishops here could still do. And, of course, the individual bishops can just go ahead and do this in their own right.
Hmm. John, likelihood of that?
Well, I mean, I think you would find a number of American bishops who would agree to some of the substance of that, probably with the exception of the rollback on the statute of limitations. The bishops in the states have always taken the argument that if you are going to roll back the statute of limitations, then you need to do that across the board. It can't just be targeted at the Catholic Church. They've argued, for example, in states where these proposals have come up, that it ought to be applied to, say, the public school system or publicly operated orphanages and so on. And states typically have not been willing to do that, which has left the bishops with the impression that this is not a genuine concern for child protection, but it's a punitive measure directed specifically at the church. But, you know, I think one thing Anne said, you know, she talked about the power that the Vatican has over the American bishops. I think another point we ought to make is that the American Catholic Church is just 6% of the global Catholic population. And things that will seem no-brainers to us just aren't from a global point of view. I mean, there was just a summit of bishops in Rome last month, something called a Synod of Bishops, which actually ended by failing to commit the Catholic Church to a zero-tolerance policy because of opposition to that that came from much of Africa, many parts of Asia, some parts of Latin America, and even some senior Italian members of the hierarchy. So the American bishops are not free agents when it comes to this. They are constrained by the Vatican, and they are also constrained by opinion in other parts of the Catholic world. And right now, that appears to be a bit of an uphill climb for them.
Well, in line with that, what about Boston Cardinal Sean O'Malley? He's, you know, the leader of the Vatican. He's an advisor to the Vatican on protecting children from clerical abuse. How does this reflect, do you think, on O'Malley? And we should say we do have a statement from O'Malley basically saying that the Cardinal will continue to vigorously advocate for holding bishops accountable and for greater transparency. Also said that this move does not change the Cardinal's commitment to zero tolerance of sexual abuse by clergy. And he thinks that the church should have more time to deal with this in Rome in February. But just a reflection on Cardinal O'Malley. How do you think this plays out, John Allen?
Well, I mean, listen, Cardinal O'Malley has always been a change agent on the clerical sexual abuse issue. He has consistently fought for reforms, both in the United States and in Rome. And if Sean O'Malley by himself were setting Vatican policy, I think we'd be looking at a very different landscape. But he doesn't. There's a sort of game that's going on out there right now where a lot of people are wanting to blame this on the Vatican, like the blue meanies in the Roman Curia, which is the church's central governing bureaucracy. Well, the thing is, that will not cut it. Pope Francis has thoroughly neutered the Curia on his watch. There is one person and one person only making decisions in Rome, and that is Pope Francis. Ultimately, particularly once we see what happens in February, you know, if there are not dramatic reform measures adopted as a result of that meeting, I don't think we can evade asking the question of where is Pope Francis on this issue.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, Anne, I've read that you have also asked for the Massachusetts Attorney General to investigate clergy abuse here. Can you tell us why you're making that request, and have other states done that?
Certainly. Right now, Deb, in the wake of the Pennsylvania grand jury report, more than 15 attorneys general across the United States have said they're doing some kind of investigation or review of the Catholic diocese in their state. In Massachusetts, we have four dioceses. Boston's only one of them, and Springfield, Fall River, and Worcester have never been investigated. The crisis is the abuse allegations are largely sealed shut in those dioceses because the bishops there have taken advantage of the charitable immunity cap, and so victims have not been able to sue because they can't find plaintiff lawyers interested in those cases. And even here in the Boston Archdiocese, much is still hidden, you know, despite the fact, as John says, that Cardinal O'Malley has really voiced strong support for holding bishops accountable. He himself admits to keeping secret the names of 91 archdiocesan priests who've been accused of child sexual abuse. This is in a letter that's still on his website. This is a stunning fact. Because we're in Boston, we get calls from Boston survivors. We know some of the survivors who've reported to the Archdiocese, and their perpetrators' names have not been made public by Cardinal O'Malley. He has some secrets of his own still. We're not saying he's breaking the law, but we're saying that there are many secrets here in Massachusetts, and the church here would be much healthier, we think, With more transparency, Attorney General Maura Healey could really help in that regard.
Okay. Ann Barrett Doyle, co-director of bishopaccountability.org. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And John Allen, editor of Crux Magazine, covering the Catholic Church and the Vatican. John, thanks to you as well.
Anytime.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.